Hey everybody, welcome to the Joe's Blood Podcast, brought to you part at YouTube. Find us, like, and subscribe. Today we have an awesome guest, a very interesting conversation that we're going to be having here. And the individual that we have is Mr. Joey Ambrosini. Joey Ambrosini, you might see him in certain films such as The Jungle Room, The Vault, Panther Documentary, My Adventures with Santa. We're going to be talking a lot about Joey. Welcome, Joey. How you doing?
I'm doing good, man. How are you?
Man, I'm doing amazing. Thank you for joining us, man. It's been a pleasure. Thank you for being a guest here at the Joe's Bot Podcast. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor.
How was your day, man?
My day was good. Another day in quarantine, school, just keeping busy, living the dream, thinking about what's to come when this quarantine is all done.
Man, you talk about quarantine, and man, it has really affected so many people in so many different ways. Just recently, we had a freeze here in Texas, and man, that took us by storm. But
I heard about that. I mean, I was like, how are you guys holding up?
We're doing fine. I'm we had good blessings and we're great. But you're from Monroe, Connecticut, the East Coast, and yes. You do snow very well, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, this winter, I mean, it's like winter started pretty late. It was like snowstorms. It's like the beginning of winter was, just the weather and, the wind. But, here we are in February, and this was like the month of the snowstorms.
Well, I mean, the groundhog said that we were going to have winter for another nine weeks. The 9 years, right? Imagine.
Great.
Oh, man. But that's one of the things. I mean, let me ask you, do you believe that climate change is occurring?
It's like, it's the kind of question you ask, if someone were to come up to you and say, do you believe in aliens? I think
aliens are true. I'm telling you. Have you ever heard of
Umu? I believe it. Just seeing what has gone on with Texas, it's like, it's definitely a theory, and I think it's being proven. I think that, that's just how the world is. I mean, nothing we can do. I mean, it is what it is, really.
Yeah. Hey, you're young, man. You're young. How young are you?
I'm 19 years old. I turned 20 this September. My birthday is September 17th. I was born in 2001. So, yeah.
Man, you know what I was doing in 2001? I was graduating high school. 2001 was one of those years where we thought we were having a great time. And then all of a sudden, September 11th hit. It shook us, it rocked us, but nonetheless, man, we're here, we're talking. Joey Ambrosini, man, I'm so excited because I always love hearing what the young mind is experiencing. So
can you say that one more time?
Yeah, I love hearing what the young mind in America is experiencing.
I mean, it's literally when you start, it's basically, I don't want to call it like when you're dreaming, because, you can always live the dream. I've always lived by, when it comes to a passion, don't speak hypothetically, make things happen. And I've also lived by the quote that, I've always told myself, it's never too early or too late to chase your dream. Yeah. And it's like, it's also a grand time when you're starting out, because you get to really learn just think about it, being 30 years old and just starting to live your dream. You almost feel like you're the guy in the room who is like, I don't know anything, and you're filled with a room full of people that are the same age as you and know everything. I mean, right. Nothing to be ashamed of, obviously, but it's like, it's always cool to start young. That way you can really gain your experience as the years go by. And, this field that I'm in, the acting and entertainment world, I love it. I love it a lot. It's a huge honor to be a part of. You know, the people I've worked with have been phenomenal, and I see me working with the same people and, you know, newer people as the years keep going by, and I'm excited and I'm happy to be a part of it.
Well, and you know, so that's, you touched on an item that I really hear quite often from younger individuals that are trying to break into the acting scene. Oftentimes these individuals they're talking and they're saying, no, well, I want to be an actor or I want to be an actress. But quite honestly, how does one get into the process? So I want you to tell the listeners is, what's your story? How did you get involved into acting?
You know, that's honestly a question I get a lot from, you know, people who know my work and stuff. It's like, you know, hey, any tips on how to get started off? I mean, see, it's harder for me to really tell them how to start off. I do tell them, you know, I mean, it, you know, if you're younger than I am, if you're in high school or anything, you might want to consider joining the drama club. Mm-hmm. See, I went to Massac High School. I never joined the drama club because at Massac High School, they didn't want people who can act. They wanted people who can sing. You know, they put on musicals. So it's like, if you're not singing, then it's like you really serve no use to them. And it's like, okay, well, you know. But, you know, I definitely would have recommended that to many young minds, then which minds I'll recommend it to in the future while my experience is boosting and I keep getting asked that same question. But
everybody wants to know what the secret to success is, right? And the problem, well, but you tapped onto an interesting subject where you said, you know, I can't tell people what to do. You can't. You literally can't. I agree with you 100%. There's no way you can tell somebody how to navigate life. But however, you have to create a plan of action is what we try to see. Now, tell me about this documentary that you have. You produced this documentary, Panther.
Panther Homecoming, yes. It is a see now the story behind that is One year before Panther Homecoming was in production, I did a documentary on, this was based on my high school football team, the Panther Homecoming documentary, you know, the homecoming game. It's like the grandest game of the season. Right. But the documentary I produced before that was also a documentary called Panther Brawl, which was a documentary about my high school wrestling team, which, you know, I really have no use for anymore. I mean, I was pretty ashamed at the outcome of it, but, right, you know, I also took it as a learning lesson. But at the same time, I was also getting messages and phone calls from Massac High School football team saying that they want their documentary. But I said, okay, this one, I want to see it bigger. And, you know, because, you know, the football is like the kingdom sport of every high school. So, in which I'm still very, you know, I still keep in touch with the football team, the football coach. It was a feature length documentary, which was kind of more than what I expected it to be, but, you know, it was awesome. And honestly, every single time, you know, people wrote a review about it, they said it brought back their high school days, you know, because we filmed, you know, the pep rally, we filmed the homecoming game, we filmed the banquet, which, you know, really is what you needed to do to put in a very meaningful and emotional story. Because think about it. I mean, these kids on the football team, it was their last season playing, which is always the most emotional. I was never on the football team, but I can honestly predict when you're on a sports team, your most depressing seasons are your first time, because, you know, you have, you know, you just started and it's grand, but then next thing you know, the most depressing is your last season. Cause it's like, it's, you know, you think back, it's like saying, it only seems like yesterday I was starting out, but the football team was just awesome to work with. And, you know, the guy I produced it with, Rocky Chai Rocky, you know, it was such an honor to be able to produce it with him. And, you know, the COVID hit, which jeopardized our plans to have a big premiere for it with a big red carpet show and, you know, lots of people in attendance, you know, but thanks to COVID, those plans were jeopardized. So what we did was we ended up doing it on YouTube, like YouTube premiere, you know, we had it live and, you know, we got like thousands of people watching, you know, our people are, you know, the views are still increasing. I think we're I think we're at 1,800 right now. Okay. We had hundreds of people watching when it streamed live. And, you know, I was just so honored to be able to give the football team and, you know, have that kind of moment. And
that sounds like that was a gift to the high school principal and to the high school body. I mean, it's a gift in itself because, again, they can always reference that film. When I saw right. it, I was able to view it. And I think I told you this. I go, man, this definitely resonates with a big audience because, again, you were able to capture so many emotions, so many interviews. You were able to capture the ins and outs of a day in the life of a high school football player, pretty much.
Right.
and a coach, you know, because the coaches were there, you know. Great film. I want to give you props on that because it was a greatly produced film. If you have not seen Panther Homecoming, it can be found on YouTube. Am I correct in saying that?
Yeah, it's on YouTube. You can actually watch it on my YouTube channel. It's an hour and 27 minutes long, and you know, just it's amazing, honestly. I mean, we've been getting a lot of great reviews on it, and I've been so excited to, you know, have
that. Was that the first time that you actually were behind the camera? You mentioned Panther Brawl.
The documentary on the that was the first time I ever produced something was Panther Brawl. But you know, again, I mean, it was really nothing special. I mean, yeah. You know, I mean, the outcome of it was just one of those things where it's like, you know, it had really no story to it.
And, nothing
you
know, special, man. If you were to if you were to do something like that here in Texas, Texas.
If I were to do something, if I were to do like a Panther Homecoming type documentary in for a high school football team in Texas, then it'd be special. But, you know, the wrestling team, I mean, the wrestling team documentary Panther Brawl, I mean, it was not that great. And if you ask me, I mean, and I'm telling you, and I'm the one who produced it.
Yeah.
I mean, it just really had no story to it. And also too, I mean, the people I worked with, they were just, you know, they lost every single one of their meets and, you know, they're just, you know, they were basic people. And, you know, some of them were, you know, they could have been a little bit better to work with, but you know, I mean, what are you really going to do? I mean,
well,
you know,
we can always open it up for reproduction, in which we now tell the story of failure, and where do we go from here?
I mean, you take it as a learning experience, of course. I mean, but I also kind of feel like, you know, looking back, I mean, maybe it wasn't that great of a documentary, but you know, think about it, this bad documentary, you know, I mean, because let think about it, what if Panther Homecoming? What if Panther, like, you know, let's wind the clocks back, actually. What if Panther Brawl was never made? And what I did in Panther Brawl is what I did for Panther Homecoming. You know, that's in Panther Homecoming. It was not something I wanted to screw up. So right. I used Panther Brawl as like my learning experience.
Okay.
I mean, even though, I mean, I wasn't the one who directed it. And the director was, you know, the director, Joe Carino, still a very good friend of mine. You know, but I mean, what matters really is that, you know, Panther Homecoming came out fantastic and, you know, Panther Brawl, I mean, it's forgotten, but you know, it's also a learning lesson, something it I is. Definitely will look it back is. On. And I'm thankful to have that learning lesson.
Now you've also been in some other films in which, such as Vault, such as My Adventures with Santa. And, I have yet to see these two, but I did get to see some clips from them. And it looks like it has a pretty good storyline, most specifically Vault. You know what I'm saying?
Vault was based on a real story.
Yeah. And so tell us a little bit about Vault, how you got involved with Vault, because you can find Vault on Amazon Prime.
Right.
So tell us about that one.
Vault was actually the first time I ever went on a film set. I landed a role in that thanks to my mentor in acting. His name is David Gere. He's a very, very extremely outstanding, prolific film producer. He's produced movies for Lionsgate, Universal Studios. You know, he's incredible at what he does. There's right. never been a disappointing movie by him. So I met David Gere at a professional wrestling event in Bristol, Connecticut. And, you know, we were just talking it up. And ever since then, he started to serve as a mentor to me, in which he, you know, still to this day, you know, serves as one. And, you know, ever since then, he's just so kind and generous. And, he was telling me that there's this movie that he's the executive producer for, and it's called Vault. You know, And we're talking about big name actors. I'm talking Theo Rossi, Clive Standen, Chaz Palminteri, Don Johnson. Who else was there? There was Burt Young, Samira Wiley, in which I got to work with Theo Rossi, Clive Standen, Samira Wiley, and Lala Kent. I played a casino patron in the background because it was for the Las Vegas casino scene, which was filmed in the old Superman building in Providence, Rhode Island. So my first time ever doing a movie, I traveled to Providence, Rhode Island. Me and my dad were there, and we were both in the background. And I was like, you know, it was, and then I remember I actually went to theaters in Providence, Rhode Island. Oh, no, it was Warwick, Rhode Island that I went to see it in theaters with my with my friends at the time. And I was just like, wow, you know, I mean, my first time doing a movie and I'm looking at it on the big screen. It's like, wow. I mean, you know, this is the dream I'm, you know, that I'm living. And I know there's many more to come. But when I was working on the set, it was so much fun. You know what I mean? And Theo Rossi was amazing to work with. You know, Theo, he was so kind and polite. And, you know, we had like a 10-minute conversation, me, him, and my dad. And, you know, Theo and I, we took a picture together on set. And, you know, I'm just telling him about how, you know, this is my first time doing a movie and how, you know, how passionate I am. And Theo gave me some fantastic advice, you know, telling me that, you know, it's all about working hard and being dedicated. And, you know, I have, and, you know, he said that, you know, that I have a believer in him, you know, if I'm willing to stay passionate and dedicated, and I definitely know I am. And Samira Wiley too. She's such a sweetheart. I got to say, you know, I mean, I remember she was walking past me on set, and I didn't want to like keep it for too long, 'cause we were literally on the set while the cameras were there. And I didn't want to like, you know, I didn't want to kill.
You don't want to be starstruck, right?
Right. But, you know, I mean, I also said where I said, I just wanted to say you are awesome. And she gives me the biggest hug, and she's just a sweetheart. I loved working with Theo. I loved working with Samira, Clive Standen, Lala Kent, Tom DiNucci, the director, Chad Averty, the producer, David Gere, the executive producer. They were all, you know, a pleasure to work with on set. And every single person that was an extra with me, like for my friend Michael Badejo, who I met on that set, and we're still very close friends to this day. You know, I loved having the opportunity to be a part of that great film.
There's definitely some interesting names that you mentioned on there. I remember Samira from Orange is the New Black, and she did fantastic in that series on Netflix. And it was one of those series where, like, it was very unexpected for the way it was. I was able, when I was viewing it, I didn't expect myself to like it as much as I did. You know, but again, it goes to tremendous acting, I think.
Right.
Tell me a little bit about the other projects that you have coming up. I mean, so The Jungle Room, man. Tell me about Jungle Room, man. Jungle Room, I'm hearing so much rave reviews about Jungle Room. I have yet to see it, but, you know, I mean, is what the reviews are saying out there true?
Yeah, Jungle Room, it's actually coming out sometime this year. I don't know when it is coming out, but... I actually remember when I first heard about it. It was originally called The Find, but you know, it got it signed a deal for production company Wild Verde Productions, and it has such amazing talent in it. You know, it has Michael Madsen, you know, from Reservoir Dogs, The Hateful Eight. It has Chelsea Vail in it. It has Blaise Serra, Chris Whitcomb, Christopher C. Romero, and myself. I play the part of Perry in the movie. My character is also known as the brother of another character. My character's brother is this character named Ricky, who's played by AJ Bernardo, and David Gere is the producer of it. He plays Mr. Green in the film, and yeah, Vinnie Marsegli is also in the movie. He plays the killer. Michael Madsen also plays the killer. It's kind of like Halloween 1978 when Michael Myers was played by Nick Castle and Tony Moran.
Right.
Michael Madsen came in the project later on, you know, because, you know, I think they wanted to do something where they wanted to evolve the film. And Michael Madsen, he's incredibly talented. I mean, he's a Quentin Tarantino movie regular when it comes to being in the cast. Chelsea Vail, she is phenomenal. She's a phenomenal actress. So Vinny Marsaglia was, you know, he was, you know, he was the character Damon, and mm-hmm. so was Madsen. You know, they both played the part of Damon, which is the killer of the movie. And Michael Madsen, you know, he also did, like, you know, he had, you know, there, you do see Michael Madsen as Damon, but Vinny Marsaglia, right. he also, like, did a lot of the choreography, like, you know, the killing and, you know, the stunts and everything. Like, for instance, I mean, when I was on set for Jungle Room, I was in a keg party scene, and, you know, we're all, like, having fun, we're drinking beer, and, you know, my character's brother, Ricky, who's played by AJ Bernardo, you know, he had a fighting scene with the killer, which was Vinny Marsaglia in the mask, and it was such a fun time. It was actually my first time having a speaking role in a feature film.
Right.
So it was a pleasure. I mean, I got to hang out with some of the cast members. I got to chat them up. You know, we all, it's like, it's awesome when you're working with a bunch of people that have the same passion as you. I mean,
yeah.
And I loved having the opportunity.
That's awesome, man. I mean, again, this Jungle Room is set to premiere in 2021, right? This coming year.
Yeah. Yes.
Any streaming services that's going to have this film that you know of?
I mean, I definitely Amazon. I mean, I'm sure it'll be in theaters as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, the people that are producing it are incredible. You know what I mean? Right. I mean, as far as, like, you know, I mean, you know, if it were to be like, I wouldn't know any otherwise. I mean, I definitely know it will be on Amazon Prime.
Okay.
But, you know, I mean, I guess that we'll just have to wait and see.
I look forward to it. I mean, I'm a big horror movie junkie.
I also want to add in this too. One thing that really had me, you know, amazed is that the film was mentioned on Deadline, which everyone knows, like, the biggest press in Hollywood history. And because they were promoting how Michael Madsen was, you know, has just been attached to the movie. Mm-hmm. And I scroll down and I'm like saying, Nick, it says that Chelsea Vale will also be in the movie, as well as Joey Ambrosini. And I was like, what? I got mentioned on Deadline? I honestly, and I have to thank David Gere for that as well. David, honestly, again, just a generous guy, you know, talented film producer, you know, he's the man, I gotta say. But, you know, I mean, just to see my name on Deadline Hollywood, that is incredible.
There's one particular thing that I'm noticing when I'm speaking to you, and it's just the way you enunciate and the way you speak. Right. How important is that? Tell our viewers how important it is to have good speaking skills.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you know, I mean, because that also has to do with, you know, if you're going to do a monologue, if you're going to do an audition, it also goes in with the style of the character as well. Like, you know, if you were to play in a mafia movie, you're going to want that Italian sort of Brooklyn gangster style accent. If you're playing like a young kid, you're going to want, you know, that young, I don't want to say high pitch, but, you know, like, you know, to make yourself sound younger, really. And
can you make yourself younger?
I mean, this is like my natural voice right here, but
right.
I mean, so really, if I'm going to sound like a young kid, I mean, you know, I mean, I'm always getting the parts of a young kid, but I mean,
Joey, like, Joey, 13 year old Joey, let's try it. Let's hear it.
I don't think I'm getting the part for this audition.
I would think it goes up like voice cracking and all.
I started when I was 16 years old.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm 19. Yeah. I'm 19 now.
Yeah.
And but yeah, playing a 13-year-old, I don't think I'll be getting that role anytime soon.
Yeah, I mean, shoot, if you ask me, I mean, I'm looking at Joey Ambrosini right now, cleanly shaved, you know, like, wow. I mean, the kid's a good-looking kid. And he says, if he was to say 13-year-old, I need a 13-year-old, I mean, I think the nervousness can definitely add to.
I mean, I can play one who's just, like, extremely tall, maybe. I mean. Sure. Why? I think I can do it.
There you go. You're talking more like a teenager right there. There you go.
Yeah, there you go.
Fumbling over words and so forth, acting all nervous and very.
Sure.
Hey man, you and I connected on a very on a topic of wrestling a while back, and we went back and we were talking wrestling, and you mentioned how like you met some of these individuals, like it's crazy how like you're at an event, and then your main goal is to go watch the event. However, what I'm capturing is that you're also networking while you're out there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a huge fan of professional wrestling. I grew up watching guys like John Cena, Batista, Chris Jericho, Rey Mysterio, The Undertaker, you know, Shawn Michaels and Triple H. I grew up watching these guys, and
it's in your backyard. You know, I mean, you're in Connecticut, the home of
Titan Sports. Well, I was actually involved in a documentary about a former WWE superstar named Justin Credible. I mean, he's a good friend of mine as well. You know, it was more, it's about, you know, his recovery and redemption. It's called Credible, which is set to release. I don't know when. I mean, as far as I know, they're still in production of it. They've been in production for a few years, but you know, I mean, it takes time to make a documentary because, you know, the story it's about, you know, you also want to do like then, now, and you know, future wise, I guess, I mean, but you know, I was, the first time I met Justin Credible was 2015, but in the documentary Credible, my scene filmed in 2018. That's when I really like started to, you know, talk to Justin, you know, just be like, hey man, I'm Joey Ambrosini. And, you know, we just started to, you know, we started to connect, you know, I mean, social media to having each other's phone number and, you know, just hitting each other up, just be like, hey man, how you been? I mean, he even came to one of my premieres when I did the Panther Brawl documentary. That premiered at Massac High School, and Justin came, David Gear came, AJ Bernardo came. The cinematographer that I work with, that I've worked with in the past for the films that I've done, Ryan Sweeney came. And yeah, no, I mean, it's cool. It's, you know, I mean, watching guys that you grew up with on TV, you know, whether it's sports or movies, like for instance, I mean, I've only been to one convention in my life, which was Connecticut Horror Fest. And, I got to meet a lot of insanely incredible talent. Sean Patrick Flannery, Danielle Harris, Don Shanks. One thing I will remember is this guy named, there was this actor named, Doug Jones. Doug Bradley, I'm sorry, Doug Bradley. He was the, you know, he was from Hellraiser, the dude who played Pinhead, and very funny guy, you know, with a strong British accent. And I walk up to him and I shake his hand. I say, you know, Doug, I want to tell you, man, I'm actually somewhat of an actor myself. And he's like, oh no, really? So am I. I'm an actor too. Nice to meet you. Like, that's my British accent, by the way. I can pass out for a British guy. So you know, I'm just like, so anyway, but I'm with my uncle and stuff, and you know, my uncle was a huge Hellraiser fan, and he's just looking at these pictures and he's like, you know, they must have hurt with all the pins in your head. And Doug Brad is like saying, like, what? It couldn't have, it was not real, you know. You know, he's probably looking at my uncle like he's crazy or something. He's like, wow, this dude will pretty much believe anything. But you know, just a very funny guy. Sean Patrick Flannery too, I mean, such a nice guy as well. I mean, I had like a 10-minute conversation with him. And Danielle Harris, sweet girl, got a picture with her. And Don Shanks, I actually have a Michael Myers replica mask that Don Shanks signed, because he played Michael Myers in Halloween 5. And I'm a huge horror fan, I love horror movies.
Which one is your favorite horror movie? I mean, if you could pick one, which one
would say it would be Halloween, but not the original, the one in 2007,
the most recent
2007.
One. Yeah. The
one that Rob Zombie made, the remake of it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but also, but you know, I mean, the originals were definitely better, but you know, the reason that's my favorite, you know, I mean, because I have a modern mind. Uh-huh. Tyler Mane, you know, I mean, he definitely was the most menacing looking Michael Myers. But you know, again, that's thinking modern there. You know, I mean, how, and I also love the mask, how it was all ripped up and tear to shreds, and you know, but it also had more intensity to it. It's like, you know, it definitely was inspired by the original story, of course. And, you know, it used scenes that were in the original story, but, you know, they also obviously switched it up a bit. And I got to say, when it comes to writing horror movies, Rob Zombie, he is a sick dude. I got to say, I mean, that dude has a mind of Oh my God. I couldn't even say the word. It's just, that dude is messed up,
well,
dude.
But then again, it goes back to like, he's immersed himself in that culture since for as long as I can remember, ever since he's been with White Zombie. And then he went into, did his own solo projects with Rob Zombie and so forth. And then when he got into filmmaking, like, wow, like, you know, everything that was in your mind, you just were able to portray it. And that takes a lot of talent. And, you know, we similarly asked the same thing, like, can it be replicated? Yeah, it can. I mean,
it's got to be hard. Individual, you know?
Yeah.
It's definitely got to be tough. It's definitely got to be tough to remake a film.
Yeah. Oftentimes, I always say, like, just leave the original alone. Stop remaking. You know, we don't want to see any remakes.
I mean, I'm sure there are definitely horror movies that never received a remake that, you know, that should have a remake. It'd be awesome to see. Like, Friday the 13th, that remake was sick. Nightmare on Elm Street, that one was, you know, I mean, I enjoyed it. But, you know, I mean, it's like, I think that... there were a lot of things that you could have done better with that movie. But Robert Englund will always be Freddy Krueger. The dude from the originals, he will always be Freddy Krueger. There's not a doubt in my mind.
One thing I did want to ask you is the most recent documentaries that I was able to see, the one on the Night Stalker, and then followed by the one about the hotel in Los Angeles. And it goes back to what you were talking about, having a sick mind. And what I was going to get to was, like, you have to, and you know, one has to play the character or put themselves in the mind of what the killer would do. But when you look at this Night Stalker guy, that guy was sadistic.
I mean, wow. The Night Stalker, that, I mean, my parents were telling me about it. I mean, the dude, I mean, he looked more menacing than Charles Manson did, I gotta say. I mean, like, that's like, you know, I mean, his eyes, how they were pitch black and stuff. You know, he had the
pentagram on his hand. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, oh my God. Like, this dude is definitely he's like a nightmare type guy. And it's like, oh my God.
And I think the fear for parents always strikes people, like, will they hurt my family? Will they hurt my children? And sure enough, that's what it is. And that's what strikes fear into America, I would think.
I mean, yeah, I mean, that's sort of debatable. I mean, because, you know, there are a lot of people out there that just that don't believe in that kind of stuff. I mean, yeah. I personally do. But it's like, you know, and because of that, I definitely would not, you know, I couldn't imagine what it would be like being in that kind of situation. But, you know, the Night Stalker, that thing was just, oh my God. I refuse to even watch it because, you know, I probably won't fall asleep.
and so then I followed it up with the other one, the one with where they talk about the hotel, that hotel in Los Angeles where the Night Stalker used to stay at. So this hotel, it's like they have, it's two different lives pretty much. You got the poshy side that's on hotels.com, and then they have all these tenants that are homeless, live on Skid Row, and they live past a certain floor.
Right.
And this one individual, like, they ended up finding her in a tank up on the tower, and they were like, well, how'd she get up there? Well, it was very easy because there was like a door. She got up to the last floor. Needless to say, man, I mean, there's so many sick stories out there, so many sick people out there, and, you know...
Yeah.
But they make for good horror movies. What can I say?
You're not wrong.
No. Hey, so wrestling is a big passion. That's in your backyard. Let's talk a little shop on wrestling. You grew up in that area, Connecticut. You got to meet some individuals when you were telling me about these individuals that you're friends with, I was just like, it makes sense because, I mean, you're in the area, but at the same time, like, how does that work for an individual that's as young as yourself? How does one do that?
I don't know, really, I guess. I guess that, you know, it's kind of a thing where it's like, if, you know, they see you at all these shows and stuff, they'll remember you and, you know, they'll shake your hand. They'll just be like, hey, how's everything been and stuff? And, you know, I mean, I don't really think there's really like a technique of doing it, unless you want to count maybe just going to, you know, all different kinds of shows that these same guy that, you know, the, these guys are booked for every show. Really don't know how to explain it really. I guess it, you know, I mean, well, the Just Incredible was more from networking, with, you know, on the sets and stuff, you know, being in this documentary. But you know, Teddy Long, who's another friend of mine, the former general manager of SmackDown, you know, him was more, you know, doing shows and stuff and, you know, just, you know, keeping in touch. And, you know, he's a great guy, I got to say. You know, I mean, I love Teddy. He's awesome. You know, I remember him when I was growing up watching wrestling, and he was the general manager of SmackDown. Yeah. You know, he gave the holla, holla, holla. And, you know, he always liked to torture Chris Jericho around. And, you know, it was like one of those things where it's like, a fun rivalry to watch, but you know, yeah, one is between a guy in office and the other is a wrestler.
Yeah, just the other day I was listening to a podcast with The Undertaker, and you know, he was on there telling his story, and I was just like in awe, because obviously, you know, I grew up watching The Undertaker, I grew up watching Hulk Hogan, I grew up watching the Macho Man Randy Savage. You know, to me, that's my reference point of wrestling. And when I look at wrestling now, which I just recently started getting back into wrestling to, you know, just to view a little bit here and there, I got to see Royal Rumble.
How can you get back into wrestling when they just made The Miz the champion?
I saw that just occurred. I'm not a Miz fan. So Miz, if you're listening and if you're watching, hey man, I don't like your character, but we can definitely podcast about it.
Yeah, I mean, you can't, it's like, that's the problem with like WWE nowadays. It's like WWE is like Disney World now, but it's like, it's, you can't even pick. I mean, I wouldn't know, but it's like, you know, I mean, I know people who, you know, even say they would not want to be in WWE because it's like, you can't even pick your gimmick. It's right. Like, and you know, now they got All Elite Wrestling, which is like, you know, sort of competing with WWE, but it's like, you're not really going to win that competition. I mean, with the amount of years WWE's been around, they got a lot of money. Vince McMahon, love him or hate him, he's the greatest wrestling promoter, but it's like, I don't know. I can't really pin it on the wrestlers, because like the wrestlers aren't the ones who make the matches.
Right.
You know, I mean, one thing for sure, I do know this is that, I don't know if you're familiar with TNA Impact Wrestling, but that organization is just outright awful. And
well, I mean, who was running it? Dixie Carter was running it, and Jeff Jarrett was running it, right?
Yeah, and one of the roster that was in TNA, he went by the Monster Abyss. As far as I'm concerned, he's one of the writers for WWE. It's like, you were a part of the roster of one of the worst organizations, and now you're writing WWE. It's like, that's a big mistake on WWE's hand right there. But you know, it's like they don't allow these guys to pick their game. I mean, because I can think of a lot of wrestlers that deserve that championship. Hey, I think that maybe if The Miz was more exciting, I mean, yeah, then I mean, I'd probably want to see him as champion. But it's like, he's got, you know, he has no charisma to him. Like, yeah. I mean, for instance, Dolph Ziggler, that dude, you know, he's had the same gimmick for decades. It's like, you don't want to see this anymore. You want storylines that are exciting.
I know who I'm excited about. I'm sorry to interject here, but the one guy that seeing right now is Riddle.
Matt Riddle, yeah, the former UFC fighter. I mean, I think that, you know, Riddle is, I don't want to say he's a newcomer, but it's like, once he gets like more exciting storylines. But the thing is, though, I also hate it when I'm watching WWE and they overuse these guys like Brock Lesnar. I don't like Brock. I mean, I loved him in UFC, and you know, I mean, I enjoyed watching him when he was in WWE. But it's like, come on, nobody wants to see Brock Lesnar as the champion for this long. Like, right. Goldberg, nobody wants to see Goldberg as champion today. They, right. I mean, it's not about. I mean, because they rely on their past way too much, but at least put them in storylines that are worth seeing now. Like, for instance, like Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns is awesome. I mean, but it's like, you know, I mean, he's been getting better storylines. I say, like, he's like WrestleMania 37 coming up. He's got his match with Edge. I think that's going to be awesome to see. But, you know, Drew McIntyre, The Fiend, like, The Fiend is honestly awesome. I love that gimmick. That's the kind of wrestling personas they need. Randy Orton, probably the best wrestler in the current roster. I would say I'm a huge Randy Orton fan. My favorite wrestler is John Cena, but I'm not really going to say he's the best in today's current roster, because I'm not really going to count him as a current roster, because, you know, I mean, kind of like The Undertaker. The Undertaker's retired now, but Undertaker would show up like once a year and stuff, and I feel like that's what Cena's going to be doing. So
and not really going to count him. This is one of the items that I keep on when it comes to Cena. Cena's a great guy. You know, I think he's the highest Make-A-Wish Foundation celebrity that gets picked often. And that's an admirable thing, and my respect to John Cena. But one thing I do add to, and I don't know how much of this is his fault, but the PG culture of wrestling, most specifically the WWF or the WWE, excuse me, is credited to John Cena.
Well, I mean, are we talking about like to this day, it's still to him?
Yes. Well,
you know, think about it though. There are really no wrestlers, even in this current roster, that makes as much money as John Cena does. I mean, John Cena is the highest paid wrestler, but John Cena has always been my favorite. I also look up to John Cena as like a hero, you know, not like in life, really. That man and what he stands for, I respect it. I mean, you know, but also too, I mean, it's like I guess it's time for John Cena to stop wrestling. I mean, you know, because he's still on the current roster apparently. Okay. I mean, but it's like he's a part-timer now, but it's like a part-timer that's only going to show up like wrestling, I don't know, because he's doing a lot in Hollywood right now too. And I mean, that's awesome. I mean, John Cena is not a bad actor in movies either, but you know, I mean, when it comes to wrestling, it's like who is there for him to face nowadays? It's like none of these guys are exciting. I mean, it's like they could be exciting, but that's WWE's fault because they write terrible storylines.
And this is another thing that I was observing. So, you know, I recently saw the Yokozuna Icons, and I don't know how many Icon series are going to be coming out. I watched it with intrigue because I said, you know, well, Yokozuna, I grew up watching Yokozuna as well. No, and then I knew about this dynasty of the Samoan dynasty that was involved with the Samoas, the Head Shrinkers, Yokozuna, Dwayne the Rock Johnson, you know, Roman Reigns, what's that girl's name? The Rock's cousin. She's one of the tag team champions now.
Nia Jax.
And all of these.
I also want to say the Usos.
The Usos, right. And Rikishi. All these individuals are connected some way, somehow. And all these individuals were the ones getting pushes. They were being moved to the top. So how much of this is actually political?
What do you mean by political?
Like, okay, there's somebody pushing for them to go. You know, well, obviously, it was revealed in the Icon that Vince McMahon has a soft spot for this family.
Like, basically, you're saying how Vince McMahon could favor these people.
Yes. Yes.
I think it's because, you know, I mean, it's a huge family tree. And just, you know, think about it. I mean,
business-wise,
starting from the top, like with Rikishi and Yokozuna, they probably, you know, they definitely influenced guys we have now, like Roman Reigns, the Usos stuff. Like, they probably all trained together. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, I mean, like, look at the Hart family, Bret Hart, Owen Hart, Natalia. And also, too, now they got Ric Flair with his daughter, Charlotte Flair. They overuse her too much. They only keep giving her all these opportunities because she's Ric Flair's daughter.
Right.
I'm not saying that Ric Flair is one of the greatest champions of all time.
Probably the greatest champion of all time.
If Charlotte Flair was not related to Ric Flair, then she wouldn't be getting all these opportunities. I mean, but also too, I remember when WWE, you know, they had all the beautiful women and stuff like the Bella Twins, Trish Stratus and stuff. You know, I mean, what we have now, I mean, they're skillful wrestlers. I remember Ronda Rousey. You know, went from divas to superstars. They're no longer called divas.
How do you feel about that connection between UFC and the transit and working with UFC to try to bring the fighters into the WWE and WWE going into UFC? Because I believe I've heard somewhere that was a partnership.
I mean, well, I don't know. I didn't hear anything about it being a partnership, but I mean, but you could be right. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I really don't follow much with, you know, those kinds of connections and stuff because, you know, I mean, I don't watch wrestling as much as I used to back then, but
yeah.
You know, with Ronda Rousey, I mean, you know, I mean, she was awesome in the UFC, but you know, the next thing you know, she loses this one fight against, I can't remember the opponent's name, but it was her last fight. She loses that fight. And next thing you know, she's done with the UFC forever. It's like, come on. Like, we win some, we lose some.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, look at Conor McGregor. McGregor talked a lot of crap about the WWE. I know that. But hey, dude, you can't. Yeah, I'm not going to hate McGregor. McGregor is my favorite UFC fighter.
Well, and not only that, because going back to that, you know, like, we live to see another fight, and hopefully he can come back from the loss to Khabib, and which we were trying to see, can he come back? And now we saw that Poirier
took him out. He did come back.
Well, he did, but Poirier took him out.
Well, I mean, you know, he knocked out Cowboy Cerrone in 40 seconds.
Yeah.
He just lost to Dustin Poirier in their second round. I think they're talking about Poirier McGregor 3. But yeah. I do have to say this, though. I know Khabib is undefeated, and he's a great fighter, but I don't care what anybody says. When him and McGregor fought, that was not the Conor McGregor I know, okay? McGregor was not prepared for that fight, all right? I mean, that was not Conor McGregor. That was a whole different Conor McGregor, one I would never want to see fighting again, because I'd rather see Conor lose but put up a fight than him lose and not put up a fight. I'd never want to see McGregor lose, of course, yeah. But, you know, after he fought Floyd Mayweather, you know, I mean, he got $75 million from it. He was probably just, you know, screwing around and with his money. And, you know, I mean, I don't really think he was that prepared, but I do believe that if he were to fight Khabib again, I mean, would he win? I think probably most people would say, hell no, Khabib would, you know, wipe the floor with McGregor. I don't know, but there is actually been a lot of talk that McGregor's going to get back in the boxing ring to go against Manny Pacquiao.
That's what I hear, man. But, you know, and you know what? If he does, I really hope he comes out to this one song called Social Orphan.
Social. Okay. I think I know where we're going.
Let me play this song, man. Just imagine Conor McGregor walking out to this song. Here we go.
Okay.
Think about it, redemption.
Yeah, yeah. Just a prince with a vision of a king. Goddamn, I remember looking back, waiting for a better thing. Now we burning up like iridescent. Better pay attention, up and coming like a couple lit. Goddamn, never looking at my path. That's a life sentence. Like a cast to a heel, only if you let it. Women lie, men lie, but numbers would never do. All I wanna do is reach out, they ain't never seen. Goddamn, I remember being bitter, but those memories have vanished. Shit from in my mansion, looking at these empty rooms. I would never panic, cause I got something money cannot buy. And that is you know what I mean? And that's the truth. This is the start of my bloodline. I'll be leading the charge. And when it does come time, I'll be leading the dark. Now it's my time, we finish what we started. One day they will know my story. Goddamn, oh yeah.
Conor McGregor, if you're listening, man, I can definitely see you walking out to this song, man. This is definitely a redemption song. I would love for you to see this, man. And now, coming down the ring, after losing the death,
yeah,
to Corey.
Yeah. Man, I never pick a place where I've been battling with demons running loud on my plate, but I'm driven to succeed. They'll be yelling now, treated cause I'm changing all my style. This is my story, my glory, my rhymes, goddamn. You can feel the hunger like I'm in a lunch line. You can say 100 times, you know how I feel. But bitch, it's my time, got nothing cause to steal. Had his vision when I wrote my first line, oh yeah.
It's a perfect song for you, Conor. You really need to walk out.
I'm not gonna disagree with that.
fights. Who are we talking that he's going to fight? Manny Pacquiao.
Manny Pacquiao. Well, I mean, I think that's, I mean,
man, this is for the orphan kids coming for the orphanage. You know how it feels just to feel they be ignoring shit. You gotta believe like no one else is there. You gotta see it before anybody else, cause that's truth. Fake people avoid at all costs nowadays. I don't focus on the little things, I got bigger. They focus on my vision kind of thing until we see what it brings, and I'll be damned. Oh yeah, I'll be facing my fears instead of hanging with my peers. Nowadays things seem close than they really appear. I'm the one, now they be fearing. Look, I got it, I just gotta stay focused and do it for the kids that be feeling hopeless. You know this is our year, our year. You know this our year, our year. And now we burning up like giving us a job. They coming like a couple of legends. Now see if they can stop us now.
Oh, man, that's Social Orphan by Dean Frost, man. Have you heard of that song, man? It's a wonderful song.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think I have before. yeah, actually, it's funny you bring that up, actually. Yeah, no, I definitely, I'm actually very close friends with Dean. It was this past Monday, we actually filmed the music video for that.
Nice, nice. When's it going to premiere?
I think I want to say mid-March. So, the director, who's also the cinematographer and the editor, he's a fast guy, but he's quality at what he does.
Right, right.
It was honestly really fun to film. I honestly, awesome. It was my first ever time doing a music video. So, uh-huh. Yeah.
And what specifically, I mean, you know what, we'll just wait till it comes up because I'm sure it's going to be a dope video. I swear to God. Like,
yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, I play this this sort of cyborg character called Jay Borg. You know, yeah, it's actually, yeah, you know, it fits me pretty well, I think.
Yeah, yeah, it does.
I worked opposite Edward Durgo, who also happens to be Dean Frost's manager. But you know, Dean as an artist, he is incredible, I gotta say. You know, I mean, he's been doing music for a little over a year now. And mm-hmm. You know, he's insanely talented. You know, I mean, I gotta give it all up to Dean, you know, I mean. You know, he's got a passion, you know, and he tells a great story, which is, you know, which is honestly what rap, I think. Well, I don't really want to say he's rap. I mean, he's more like he's rap, electro pop alternative, but you know, rap in general today, you know, I mean, rap is not as good as it used to be.
Let's just say that's, to me, that's mainstream, but it's also something that I can pump myself up to.
Yeah, it's like dance music. It's like, you know, EMD, I think they call it.
EDM.
EDM.
Electro dance music, yes. But yes. Hey, man, I would love to have Dean Frost on the show. I would love to do a segment with him. So maybe in the near future, hey, Dean, if you're listening, I would love to see you here on the Joe's Bob podcast, and we can definitely talk about your music and your sound. But I'm telling you, man, Connor, if you're listening, Connor McGregor, that is a great song for you to walk out to. I kid you not, man. The message is there. You know, like, hey, I'm redeeming myself for what happened. Here I am. The numbers don't lie. I mean, I was listening to the lyrics and I'm like, man, this is awesome. All right, man. Hey, I heard that the jungle, that you're going to be also in the sequel.
Jungle Room, yeah.
You're going to have, there's going to be a sequel to it and you're also going to be in it. Is that true?
You know, I mean, I'm not really supposed to give away much about the film, but, I guess that, you know, I mean, you asked, it's my job to answer. Yes, I will be returning for the sequel of it. So, you know, Joey Ambrosini will be reprising his role in Jungle Room 2.
I'm excited for you. I'm sure everybody, the world is excited for you. Joey, it's been wonderful having you here today. It's been a pleasure. We talked a little bit about your career in film. We talked a little bit about what got you there and so forth. And we're also talking about, hey, wrestling but most importantly, like stuff that can definitely help out other people. The goal here is always to listen to your story and also reference it so that we can help others. That's the goal here at the Joe's Bud Podcast. And you know what? I really appreciate it.
With that being said, Joey Ambrosini, everybody give it up for Joey Ambrosini. We'll be here pretty soon, and we'll talk later. Joey, maybe we can have another segment pretty soon in the near future after Absolutely. The Jungle Room premieres. I would love to have you.
Absolutely, my friend. Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
All right. See you next time. Please like, share, and subscribe. We'll see you soon. Have a good one.